This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharit Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. It is 7.06 in the morning, Tuesday the 13th of August, and the stock benchmarks finished slightly sharply lower in the US yesterday, building on the previous week's decline on lingering worries over the US-China trade tensions as well as continued unrest over in Hong Kong.
Yeah, so we see the US market dropping quite heavily yesterday. Dow plunged 1.48%, S&P 500 sank 1.22%, and NASDAQ fell 1.2%.
And there was some respite in Asia, and that's because markets were actually closed, not because that we had any better news than anyone else. But for the markets which were up, Hong Kong actually declined 0.44%, while the Kospi was up marginally 0.23%. Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia, India, Pakistan, Japan were all closed.
I wonder why Japan was closed, though.
Yes, they have lots of public holidays.
I was wondering, whether or not they were celebrating Raihaji like everybody else.
No, they
probably
had another
not.
Holiday.
Yeah.
But to give us some insight into the global market performances, this on the line today, we have Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Thank you for joining us this morning, Joe. Good morning. So U.S. equity markets have been a bit of a yo-yo. What do you make of these wild swings that happened last week, and what should investors do?
Well, right now, it's the geopolitical risk in and around Hong Kong, China, it's the trade risk. I think the markets right now are discounting lower earnings estimates for Q3 as we wrap up a decent earnings season for Q2. But there's just a lot of uncertainty. So right now, we wouldn't be rushing in to put any money to new work, but there's starting to be value created in financials, industrials, other parts of the markets. But you're going to have to be patient. I think we go lower before we find the bottom. So be careful, be look at dividend payers and buy good companies.
And Joe, there is more than $15 trillion in government debt around the world with negative yields. With 10-year U.S. Treasuries now at 1.64%, falling from 3.2% in October last year, is negative rates possible for U.S. government debt too?
You never say never. I highly doubt it. However, I think the Fed would be much more aggressive. Remember, go back to 10 years ago during the financial crisis under Bernanke, Geithner, and Paulson. The U.S. was much more aggressive in being proactive and staving off a recession that was deep but could have been deeper. I expect the same thing from this administration, this Fed, to act much more proactively. We might be looking at 50 basis point cut in September instead of 25. So I think we can stave off the negative interest rates. But no doubt globally it's a deflationary force that's gaining momentum.
And the IMF last Friday dismissed U.S. President Donald Trump's assertion that China is manipulating its currency for unfair trade advantage. Now, do you see this issue being put to rest, or do you think currency is actually the new weapon in this trade war?
I mean, it could be de facto in the sense that all the central banks around the world are now easing, which weakens their currencies relative to the strongest currency out there, or the country with the highest rates, which is the United States. So, I don't think I'm going to be relatively optimistic and say that policymakers should understand history, that any currency wars is just a race to the bottom. No one wins. So I hope cooler heads prevail in Europe, China, the United States, Japan, really across the world.
And Joe, oil prices have continued to drop this month due to President Donald Trump's announcement that the trade talks with China next month could be called off. If it is called off come September, do you expect oil prices to slide below the $50 mark?
Oh, I think that's very possible. And it's not just the ongoing trade tensions between the United States and China. It's really Europe. Europe, remember, is the second largest economy in the world collectively, the European Union, 28 members. That is sinking into recession. That's dragging down growth. It's dragging down oil demand. So I think oil prices could dip below $50 per barrel, but do more to just general weaker growth emanating from the trade wars, but also just a Europe that can't seem to get out of its way and do anything proactively.
Thank you so much, Joe. And that was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, echoing also what we've heard from some of our other Market Watch commentators with regard to oil, specifically that the problem now is in oil demand, because previously we saw, you know, geopolitical risks, tensions rising in the Strait of Hormuz. That was putting pressure as well on the on oil supply side. But now we have demand slowing as well from Europe as well as the U.S.
Yeah, with global trade definitely slowing, we do see the impact of a much lower consumption of oil. So if you imagine during the height of the Strait of Hormuz crisis, oil was only still hovering at $63, $64 per barrel. Now, if it was really good times, Charlie, and the economy was booming, I think oil could easily get to $80, $90 per barrel. So that kind of shows you how weak demand really is.
Yeah, so this is definitely a space to watch, isn't it? Especially for us, once it reaches $40, it's something that will be red flagged by the government, especially on the budget.
I think below $50 already, there is a red flag because of the number we use in our budgets. And budget 2020 is coming up very soon on October 11th.
I wonder what will be the reference point. Eh?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what our finance minister uses as the oil reference price.
Now, taking a look at some other international headlines this morning as well, the chances for a swift and satisfactory conclusion to the U.S.-China trade standoff have fallen in recent weeks, and equity analysts at Goldman Sachs are warning that the conflict could escalate further next week when a short-term exemption allowing U.S. firms to sell certain products and services to Chinese telecom firm Huawei, that is set to expire.
So this, you know, we're looking at this deadline concerning U.S. sanction against Huawei looms next Monday, which is 90 days exemption from certain exports restriction. And Goldman Sachs called 19 August a key date for equity investors that could serve a flashpoint for additional volatility.
Yeah, we do. We have seen some of the international research houses, the international investment banks, actually having a dimmer outlook in terms of the economy. Goldman Sachs is the first. There have been other reports like from Jefferies. And even on the local front, we have heard more of that dreaded R word being used a lot more, recession, right? It seems more likely than not with each day passing. I think with the weaker data points, especially coming out of Asia, only US seems to have slightly above trend growth. But I wonder how long that can last.
All right. And also, South Korea has hit back at Japan in the current World War II dispute they are having by saying it will take Japan off of its favored trade partners list. And this move is a tit-for-tat response to Japan's decision earlier this month to do the same to South Korea. It really does look like tensions between South Korea and Japan aren't going to be dying down anytime soon.
Yeah, so this is definitely going to be interesting, especially, I mean, not interesting, but it'll be a space to watch for the electronics sector. Looking at microchips being affected because they both rely on each other in some ways. Both technologies require, for an example, the LCD screen that we look at, and as well as the silicon chips that they use to, you know, power up their processors.
Yes, this is complicated by the fact that both countries need to be seen being quite firm in their approach to each other because of the history that they share, right?
Especially, this is not unlike the U.S.-China, U.S.-China situation, where they have to be seen as being steadfast and having their own national interests at heart so that they can appeal to their own public, essentially.
Yeah, exactly, which then makes these whole trade negotiations so complicated, right? Because it's not about GDP, it's not about economy, it's much more than that. If you ask me, it's about an Asian thing, which we like to call face.
Yeah, at the same time, I think it's U.S. not being in the picture. I mean, previously, before Trump, I mean, we've always seen U.S. playing that role as the playing that mediation role between countries that are in conflict.
It's
and this
also,
time around,
it's
also it's not
the fact that now trade war is acceptable. Fighting about trade is considered the new norm, right, in today's world. It wasn't the case, let's say, 2-3 years ago. You didn't have this kind of trade war brickbats between countries so open. I mean, the most recent one has been India and Pakistan over the Kashmiri, and now they're fighting over trade also.
Yes, yeah, so it's this kind of crossing of security issues into the economic sphere. And basically, Donald Trump has been quite the trendsetter in this regard, because particularly with South Korea and Japan, right, it's not just a fight about the economy or trade. It is a long-running history between the two countries, because at one point, South Korea was occupied by Japan. Mm-hmm. And they've had, you know, it's the Comfort Women dispute. And all of these things have had a very... even recent repercussions. You know, the Comfort Women issue, for example, was only somewhat resolved, I think, in the 90s. So all of this is still very recent history for a lot of the people in South Korea as well as Japan. So looking at this dispute now, it's unsurprising that it has blown to these kinds of proportions. But looking also at Latin America, fears of a full-blown financial crisis in Argentina have once again come rushing to the fore. And this is in the wake of President Mauricio Macri's stunning rout in primary elections over the weekend, which saw investors dump their stocks, bonds, as well as currency en masse.
So it's in a sell-off that left much of Wall Street wondering whether this crisis-prone country is heading towards yet another default. So primary is widely seen as as a preview of October's presidential vote, and an upset could allow the doors to be open, and also looking at real possibility of a more protectionist government, after the government has taken power in December.
Now, the key thing about this event is that there was a shift definitely back to developed markets versus emerging markets, because there now really is a clear risk that emerging markets could see credit default swaps coming under pressure. I mean, for example, the credit default swaps now show that traders in Argentina are already pricing in a 75% chance that Argentina will suspend debt payments in the next 5 years. Just Friday, before this news came out, the likelihood was actually 49%. And the dollar-denominated government bonds lost 25% on average, pushing down prices to as low as 55 cents on the dollar, which are very, very sharp movements in the fixed income space. Now, another important indicator, of course, is their own currency, the peso, which tumbled as much as 33% to a record low 60 per dollar. This is not very good for emerging markets, even for markets like us, because it tends to signal that, hey, maybe we need a risk-off approach.
Yeah, EM contagion, right?
Yes.
And not to mention the fact that the Merval stock index also lost the most ever in intraday trading. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.